Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your host, John Gabris, your boy, the number one fuck boy, the number one fuck boy, the number one fuck boy. I like calling you unprofessional and then going into that introduction. I'm sorry, but I'm a real man.
Actually, it's a very cool introduction.
Thank you.
And we're just recording and not stopping, right?
Yes, we're not.
Okay, so it's unlike my podcast where I record for like 3 hours of nonsense and get like 20 minutes of decent
and
comedy.
And put it all on Chad's shoulders to sort out. On my podcast, I just talk for an hour and then the listeners deal with it. Or listeners in quotes. We don't know who's actually listening to this shit.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that you probably have a lot of listeners, right?
I think I have a decent amount. By the way, if you don't know at this point, if you haven't read the description before you started playing, or you don't recognize this voice, this is friend.
No, I'm just kidding. Sure, you can say that.
This is my friend and comic genius and one of my favorite SNL performers of all time, Horatio Sanz. Thank you for coming to
thank
me.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to hold for the applause. Studio.
I'm also realizing I leave the air conditioner on. I called you unprofessional. I have the air conditioning on. My dog is on your lap, and I'm screaming fuck boy into a microphone.
And you have like some vanilla candle.
Oh, yeah. I got a candle lit because I'm married, and when you smoke weed, you got to light a candle.
Fair enough.
When you do anything, you take a shit, you got to light a candle. There's a lot of lighting candles in marriage.
You know, even being single, I try not to, like, smoke too much inside the house.
Yes.
So I'll blow out.
I'll blow out the window,
and then I'll walk into the bathroom and just smoke weed in the bathroom.
I smoke a lot of weed in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Out of, like, just, like, it's already stinks in there. I'll go in there, light a candle, drop a deuce, smoke a joint on the toilet, and try to keep the smoking to one room. So that's why I have this back office and also a shitter. Shitter's full, Clark.
Well, all right. This is a very cool little setup you got here.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for coming to do it. We've been talking about doing this for a while, and I've always I love doing your podcast. I thought I got to have you on mine.
Yeah, thank you. We were just talking about how I record for like 3 hours.
Yes.
Or more. And then you said let Chad figure it out. then we get like a half hour of goodies. But yeah, it's mostly because Chad's like editing the whole time.
Yeah.
But I love this too. Just show up, let's do it, and then an hour,
This is exactly what got me into improv was like, all right, once you're good at it, you don't need to do any line memorization, any like, you know, you just roll, do the show. You don't have to think about
it. It's the perfect occupation or craft for a lazy person is improv.
100%.
Holy moly.
I've been trying to do stand-up lately, and I just don't have. And I've gotten lazier in the last 10 years. Who hasn't?
Sure.
But trying to do stand-up lately, and it's so much harder. Like, writing jokes and like having to be around, like just having to wait your turn to go up is hard.
Well, I didn't have that problem because, you know, because I've been invited to do these SNL like things. Like it's SNL night. And then there's like four SNL comedians who do stand up who, and most of them don't, just are doing it now because
you need to make money.
You need some money. It's a good thing to do. And so I was like, sure, I'll do it.
That's always a resounding.
In Cancun.
Oh, you
we went to Cancun and I did a show and, you know, honestly, the first thing I asked was, can I get weed there? And they're like, oh, yeah, no problem. I get there and it's like fucking Richard Nixon's running this hotel. Like, oh, okay, like I get
the
there.
First
like,
thing you ask the person who books you is, can I get weed there?
Yeah. Well, that usually is the first question.
Sorry, that must be my wife and my dog is now protecting the house. Go out there and hang out with her.
Good doggy, Arthur.
Arthur is great. And then you had to go up without weed.
I had to go up. No, actually, well, yeah, I did. I actually had to go up without weed. That's not too hard. The hard part was telling the jokes over and over again. I felt like I was cheating.
Oh, because you had to do a couple of nights of it or something like that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I did it like 3 or 4 times, and so after that, I started getting these jokes, and I'm like, okay, these are my jokes. Odd, you know, because we're not trained to say the same things over and over again. And if you do, you have a bag of tricks and it's kind of like looked down upon.
Right, right.
So it's
really weird. You get bored of your own material. I found that like writing things that weren't sketches as well, where you like the sixth time you're going over the pilot script, you're like, I hate all of these jokes. Because improv trains you, and this is maybe the drawback of improv, is that it gives you no patience to like hone things.
Yeah.
Like some people have that. Like Besser has that skill set. Ian has that. Like, but for me, I'm just like, I'd rather change something every time. And the audiences are new, and you're like, this joke bores me now. Well, now I got to find something new. And they don't fucking know.
When we did Second City, me and my friends at the time, it was very tough also because we were coming from Improv Olympic into Second City and you're writing a show.
Right.
You're not improvising
the
whole
show.
Yeah. And that becomes your review. And what will you keep honing and honing and honing, and finally you open the show and you get good reviews and immediately you start changing it and fucking it up.
Because you had
no patience. I'm like, okay, we opened, we got good reviews, people are coming here. Awesome. Let's fuck it up.
And there's an element of improv that is for the performer, you know, and you lose that in like when you're thinking about the audience, you're like, but I kind of want to fuck with my scene part. Once you're doing it for a while, all you want to do is like, I just want to alley-oop Horatio in this moment. Or I just want to force him into doing something that I know would be fun for us to be doing.
Yeah, I don't see it as failure when there's no laughs, as long as like my friends in the back row are kind of tittering and you know, I can feel that energy, and it's like at that point, unfortunately, the audience kind of goes out the window. I can hear them, and I can I can time that.
Yeah.
But it's mostly about these guys that are laughing back here.
I've been in a number of shows with you, and there's a moment I can see a moment when you're like, I don't hear. I'm gonna make you laugh, Gabrus. I don't give a fuck what else is going on, and I love those moments.
And some people are really. That's really fun to make some people laugh, obviously, yes. And you're one of those people.
Yeah,
and likewise, you always crack me up as well. Let's not. It doesn't go one way.
Well, I get caught up in that game too. I'm just like, this is about just getting Horatio to break at this moment.
And then it's like, okay, if that's what the show is, and we're like, this is like the age old question of like, well, why did you laugh so much on SNL? I just really felt like there were people that were from Groundlings that were doing such honed, well-crafted bits that even Second City, I wasn't really doing Second City stuff at SNL. That wasn't what I was doing at SNL. So I kind of just kind of got into this mode of fucking around, and that was kind of what drove all that comedy.
Do you still get that question a lot when you get interviewed and stuff?
Not as much.
But at the time?
Yeah, at the time.
Where people are like, you and Fallon are such little clowns. You guys having fun out there? Hey, it's me, Jeff from the Vulture magazine. You silly billies.
What are we recording into? Is that a lighter?
You guys had fun cracking each other up, am I right?
Because I loved you. I loved you and Jimmy on the show as a fan of SNL for a long time, as a fan of comedy. And then when I got to meet you and start performing together, and I was like, how did this dude ever do SNL based on the kind of shit you like to do? I was like, how did you survive at SNL? I mean, it looks like you were having a good time. Did you enjoy it? Like, because it's total.
I was very frustrated.
Memorizing lines, being serious, and like following rules are three things I don't see you doing. Like,
well, here's the thing that worked really well for me. Coming from Second City, the audiences were a similar size.
Yes.
And as long as you can hear the audience, you know, you're all right. Like,
right.
You kind of forget that there's a camera with eight.
Yeah,
you know,
you're doing a live. You're
people.
Doing a Saturday night sketch show for a drunk.
Kind of.
Chicago,
you know, there's
people.
Huge stakes. Yeah, you know, yeah. There's huge stakes, and it's either like make people laugh or you're fired.
Those are the most fun situations to be in.
And cue cards.
Oh,
cue
right.
Cue cards. The saving grace. Because if I had to memorize two or four scenes on Friday night, it would be a fucking nightmare. So the cue cards are essential. And
so you're stepping out there into every sketch completely confident because you have a stage presence. You've been performing live for a long time. And with cue cards there, you're like, worst comes to worst, I blank and I read it. Or
exactly.
Yeah.
It's 2 seconds of like someone being like, oh, wow, look at him looking at the card.
Yeah.
But so you just do that. Often enough that you kind of learn the tricks.
What are tricks that you learn?
Well, Will Ferrell had a good trick, which is he would perform every scene out to like 3 spots. So and the cards were all near those spots.
Smart. So like he can give that like classic like dead-eyed stare into the distance, but he's reading a cue card. Like
yeah, and so you learn from those guys. I'd always my eyesight got worse as I was. On the show, and
that's bad news.
And it was bad news for the cue card guy. I started going blind.
I can't memorize lines, and now I can't read.
And I can't improvise.
I'm certainly not allowed to improvise. Did you and Jimmy started at the same time?
Yeah, we were hired at the same time.
And
yeah.
Did you know him at all before going
into
that?
No, not at all.
And did.
We just bonded, like kind of like, you know, you're both going to...
The same generation. You're like going away to college.
Yeah, exactly.
You met
him
at orientation.
Right.
Like that college friend where you're like, hey, I'm scared here. Me too. Let's hang out.
And we didn't really do the same thing, so there wasn't any of that jealousy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you and... I mean, at judging books by their covers, you and Jimmy are not competing for roles.
Right, exactly. So
he's like 16, and
and the obvious differences in our bodies and our looks made us a great comedy duo.
It is the classic 10, tall, thin, and circular. Number 10.
It just works.
Always works in comedy.
It just works.
As someone who's been a giant number 0 his whole career, it works.
And now I'm a number 4, and
yeah,
and I make that work, you know.
What was that like? I'm just very curious about your first time or your audition getting to SNL. Like, what was that like? Did you have some friends that were already on it from Chicago?
Yeah, Tina Fey and Adam McKay were head writer. You know, Adam was head writer at the time, and Tina was. Married to Jeff Richman, who she still is married to.
Yeah.
And he was my musical director at Second City, ETC.
Oh, right, right.
So I remember before I auditioned for Second City, I was getting pretty frustrated at Second City as well. And I told, we all went out to see the Oscars or something. I think we went to her house to watch the Oscars and we're all hanging out. And I asked, I was like, I think I'm going to move to LA and quit. And she's like, don't, because then there'll be nowhere for me to send you. Or send people to watch you.
Oh.
And you're not going to look better than at Second City at the moment. Like,
oh, it was just like, this is the place to go get people now. And you were doing well at the time.
Yeah.
And you were just getting bored and maybe ready for the next step. And
exactly.
And Tina was like, I think I got your next step.
Yeah, yeah. Just stay there.
That's really awesome.
And that was immense, obviously, help in my career. But when I got there, I remember the first thing that I heard Lauren speak when I was auditioning, he turned to McKay and he's like, so this is your friend?
And
it was like it's such a fuck move that it's such a like, ooh, I'm going to get these guys that I kind of laughed and I was like, okay, I got it.
That moment didn't break you. Like you were just like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is the situation we're in here.
If anything, it just kind of made me feel even better because you know now he's like he's talking to the guy and he's saying, hey, this guy better be good.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so you know you're coming with like a little bit of a backstory. They were like, this is the guy I was telling you.
Yes.
About. That's
yes.
And what did you do in your audition? Did you do anything that would eventually be on the show?
Another fortunate thing is I had like 3 months to prepare. Like the producers at the time, Tim Herlihy and Steve Higgins, they came to Second City and watched the show. And then they're like, well, the auditions are in 3 months or 2 months, and we want you to come out. I was like, oh, fuck, wow, crazy, good.
And you're just in Chicago with all of your genius comedy friends, and you're like, I got to come up with some characters. Or did you have characters from the review you were
doing? I had a few characters. I had like I had an impression of Robert Stack that I did like when I was 9.
The Unsolved Mysteries guy.
Yeah, that I stole from Dan Aykroyd. When I was a kid, Dan Aykroyd did Robert Stack on The Untouchables.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it was like, I want to know what's going on. I want to know now. And then later, it was Unsolved Mysteries. It's like, if you have any information on the whereabouts of Horatio's hands, please dial the number on the screen. Just this horrible old. And so I just did a character. I was like, oh, my character is a guy who sounds like Robert Stack, and he's just getting pranked by the neighborhood kids who just want to hear him say, if you have any information on who keeps calling me and waking me up.
That's
that was
awesome.
One. And I did Truman Capote because I knew Lauren would probably like it. Because who the fuck knows who Truman Capote is
anymore?
That's going to
be a good Weekend Update desk bit recurring. Back
it was
again.
Used.
Is...
It actually was used
Did
a few
you
times.
Ladies
yeah,
and
all
gentlemen,
gets used
Truman
up.
Capote.
And people were as confused then as you'd expect them to be now.
You have a knack for choosing characters that people know, but like Aaron Neville. Like people know who he is, but not enough. Like,
well, like well, you know that's a classic. Make it funny before you make it accurate. I learned that. I heard fucking Dana Carvey say that, and I was like, oh yeah. That's perfect.
Was that
I
was
like
that a piece of advice you heard when you came to
coming up or somewhere? I heard it and I was like, I like that rule. And so
well, it also makes you as a performer more comfortable with it. You're like, rather than worrying about the accuracy, you worry about the thing you're good at. Is can I make this funny?
Yeah,
yeah. That's I feel much more comfortable trying to get something funnier than to get it better.
Yeah, because you know a perfect impression without a joke. it's like okay, that's cool. I guess. I guess this guy didn't have a childhood and watched like 40 hours of TV a fucking weekend. That's another thing. Those impression guys are all fucking. I mean, we're nuts, and I know that. But they're a certain level of nuts.
Impression
where like,
guys are weird because then they're like analyzing everything they watch to see like ticks and shit that they can do.
Yeah,
which is weird.
Yeah, And when I was really lost, I'd go up to Daryl Hammond and I'd be like, oh, "Hey man, what do you got here?"
And was he just like one of those dudes who's just like, "Oh, like, if you want to do Aaron Neville, you got to make sure you see this and that."
He'd be like, "Well, you know, Newt Gingrich kind of sounds like Kermit the Frog a little bit, you know," and he would do this, you know, scientific kind of, you know, a scientific list of ingredients, you know, to
do
this impression.
Got a little bit of Kermit the Frog, and then you can, it would like translate for you.
Yeah. But a great example of trying to make it funny, you know, in quotes, I'm making quotes right now funny, was I did, Jimmy wrote the scene with John Lennon and Garcia. Meet in heaven.
Jerry Garcia
and John Lennon meet in heaven.
Perfect casting.
And, okay, we're doing it. And so he does a perfect John Lennon. And it's time for me to do my Jerry Garcia. And I get a tape of Jerry Garcia. They would make tapes instantly from tapes they had. And so you watch them, and that's how you learn your impression. And I had Jerry Garcia. And Jerry Garcia was... He was like a hippie, but not too much, you know, and, you know, we just like to do our music. And so I was like, we tried that in Dress. That was not going to go. Any kind of accuracy had to go out the window in place of, hey, man, you want a jam, brother? Completely selling this poor guy out. probably on the heroin watching me like, that doesn't sound like me at all.
Man. His friends are like, Jerry, chill. Was that, like, coming up doing characters, like, that would be the most, I would be so terrified to have to try to do characters, like impressions. I forget, like, I recently just did, like, voiceover, and they were like, oh, can you, and it was like, it was for Nick Kroll's show, and I was playing a small character, and they were like, can you make him a little more older? And I was like, I am having a hard time. I can barely do anything here. And it's in front of Nick Kroll, like a master character actor. I'm like, I can't do it. They're like, make him sound older. I was like,
that happened to me so many times next to Jimmy. Fuck, he did this Howard Stern bit, and I was going to be stuttering John. And I just couldn't do it. I was just like, Howard! Jimmy looked at me like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like the scene isn't going anywhere.
When I was like doing sketch at UCB, people would be like, all right, yeah, so in this sketch, you're like Peter Frampton, so you just have like a British accent. I was like, guys, I don't think you have an idea. I can't even do accents.
And that's the thing. And Lauren, too, doesn't really... He kind of doesn't want you doing things you don't look like. I don't think part of his comedy, his sensibility is like, that's a little too much.
And nothing makes me happier than like putting on like a blonde wig and being like, it's me, Daniel Craig. off-type fucking impressions make me laugh.
You just have to be like, you just have to fucking really just throw it out there because... Yeah, like I did that character with Jimmy and Leatherman, or Choo Choo. And it was just this incredibly weird page boy wig.
I love it.
And then I'm like, oh, I'll just do Peter Lorre. That'll be my character. Peter Lorre with this crazy wig, and he's just like this leather fetishist. And he goes, I like the whip. And then when he got whipped, he go, hey! Which is kind of like a Mexican horse whip. All right, let's smoke a little.
Yeah, let's
blaze
a little. How long were you on the show for?
8 years, 98 to 2006.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really. Yeah, they really let me hang around a lot longer than I probably should have.
You are in some of the most classic sketches ever, like just from that time period. Looking through, you're in fucking More Cowbell. You have that one line. He speaks for all of us. When you turn to Will, and it's like to put Horatio and Jimmy in a sketch with Will Ferrell, where they don't have lines, is just asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Walken is hysterical in that sketch.
Walken is so, like, I was thinking about. Out of nowhere, I'm just like, I would like to see Christopher Walken do that, the plant guy sketch. Have you seen this?
Yes.
I can watch hours of
that. Doing great. I'm doing great.
Holy shit.
It is the morning.
It is noon. Yeah. Wait, what were we just talking about? No, I forgot.
Walken crushing.
Oh, the scenes, the big scenes. Yeah, people still ask me about Cowbell,
Debbie Downer.
What other one? Well, those two are the
main two
ones
of the, like those are the most rewatched ones, and they're elements of people breaking in them, but it's not as much you like. That's everybody. It's not just you and Jimmy being like little rascals.
It's not us. You know, putting a rat on the buffet plate. You know?
So
like the Stooges.
One Horatio Sands sketch quote that me and my brothers have been making since we first saw the sketch, and we still say it. It's a half-eaten taco in my Toyota Tercel. We do not say Toyota Tercel without putting. And my high school girlfriend drove a Toyota Tercel, and we would always go, "It's time to go get in the Toyota Tercel." Because that is just my favorite. One of my favorite traits about you is making a meal. You have two lines in that sketch, and you go, "Hey, guy."
Well, because also because it was a fat joke. So if you're gonna write me a fat joke, I'm gonna really deliver it,
right?
And I'm gonna show you my a little bit of my disdain for it by making a huge meal out of it.
This is official Looney Tunes. I'm sure that kills in the break room at Circuit City. We were just obsessed with that sketch. If you're not sure what I'm talking about the Jeffries fashion sketch with Sean Hayes and Jimmy Fallon as like elitist snobs.
Yeah.
Which ends with Will Ferrell just doing the most, comes in on a rascal, has the tiniest cell phone ever. It's the most Will Ferrell shit ever in that sketch.
A little interesting fact of that is that Ben Stiller was a little mad that Will used a little phone.
Oh, because of Zoolander.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right.
But that little phone, I should have stolen that thing. It was so great.
That thing, for those that's who just didn't one of those jokes that's always going to work.
Forever. Forever.
I think opening a super tiny, if you in improv improvise a super tiny phone, it's like, that's a gimmick. You'll get a laugh every time. You'll get a laugh if you open up a super tiny.
I don't like to use it too often, but sometimes I'll use it just an insanely big phone. And if I just come consistent with it, you know, it's believable.
Yeah, all you have to know, like maybe it's just a, you know, he's a big phone guy. You know, it's an iPhone 7.
Yeah, what year? Maybe he's holding a phone that was used in the Korean War.
He's doing a period piece.
Exactly. I'm making my world. I don't know what you're doing.
Well, who were your friends when you were on the show? Did you like? I mean, sure. Because did you have like buddies? It looks like you and Jimmy, and you guys did. What was the? What's the sketch that you guys did from your college dorm where you were Gobi or Dobie or whatever?
Gobi. Yeah, he was just a college kid, and I just came in stoned, and I would just I would usually sing a little song like bong ba bong bong bong, and then I'd laugh.
And the one I remember is you come in and you go, "Hey, I got a joke. You know those chips, baked Lays?" And then you laugh, and then they go, "Did you come over there?" And you're like, "Nah, somebody told it to me." That's so funny. You don't have a joke. You just say a food, laugh, and they go, "Did you come over there?" And you go, "Nah, someone told me." It just makes that character so funny.
Yeah, I didn't smoke weed at that time either.
No?
No, and it was a shame because I was given so much weed. I would just get all this weed from people, like if I do a show at bars.
Right.
Everybody
right.
wanted to smoke with me,
right,
you know,
right.
which was beautiful. And I would be like, I can't, but I'll have a drink.
Which ended up being a bad thing.
It ended up being a terrible thing. I should have just smoked.
Turns out,
Gobi.
I should have said, let me have some weed and let me put this drink down.
Yeah. I turned from Gobi into fucking Nicolas Cage and leaving Las Vegas.
Sorry, I can't smoke. I'm destroying my life a different way.
I'm pouring whiskey on my cock and getting my dick sucked
by Elizabeth Shue.
By the dad from Alf. Remember when the dad from Alf was fucking homeless people? And doing crack with homeless people? It's the fucking
best thing ever.
They were like, National Enquirer had it on the front page, The Examiner, all the shitty gossip rags had the dad from Alf having sex in a hotel room with homeless dudes and doing crack with them. Perfect.
I remember seeing a picture.
I'm not living. We're not living.
Yeah.
We're not living.
Dude, yeah, what are we doing? We're smoking weed on a Saturday afternoon doing a podcast. We could be fucking smoking crack with homeless people in a hotel room.
We can go to Walla Walla, Washington, get a hotel room for 3 months and just blow it out. Just tear the place down and then come back.
There we go. Let's do that. Let's make a documentary.
You know, Spencer Tracy would go to a hotel for like a weekend and just destroy it.
And then
sit in the bathtub and drink whiskey and just go crazy, tear it up, rip the paintings off the wall. And then he'd be like, all right. And then like Monday.
On Monday. Like
Monday
he'd
come out.
Shirt,
yeah.
Shave.
In a suit, all perfect. He's like, yeah, just send me the damages, the bills for damages. And it was perfect. They're like, okay.
He's like a werewolf.
Spencer, yeah. He's like,
I got to check into a hotel at the full moon. Like, well, sir, here's the deposit because I'm going to get crazy up there. It's like. Dater tots, room 212, no silver.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's fucking awesome. So I often fantasize of having that, like, with weed or maybe drink someday, but I can't drink right now. But
yeah. I could go. I do that sometimes.
Well, that's what the Del Close is, kind of.
Yes, it's like I'll sleep 3 hours a night, eat 7 dinners a day, and smoke weed and do whippets for a full weekend.
I forgot there was an other world. I got thrown out of the party for smoking weed, the UCB party.
What?
Off the balcony. I wasn't thrown off the balcony. I was kicked off a party.
And everyone was confused because you landed on your feet 5-7 floors down.
Yeah, they're like, what?
He's in way better shape than you remember.
Well, I hit an awning on the second floor, and that bounced me up. So it's off in the fall.
Wait, this at the recent one, you got thrown out for smoking weed?
I got thrown out for smoking weed on the balcony, and then the lady was like, give me it. Like, gimme it. Who are you? You're working.
Lady.
You're checking. The,
Shannon O'Neill.
She's the security lady. Not
some lady.
The security lady working the party. And I was like, no, I'm leaving. She's like, well, you're leaving. And I'm like, fine. And I walked out, like, oh. Like, and then the next day, I was getting high across the street from UCB.
At the projects.
In the projects.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But the dumpster by the projects. It's low income housing. Let's not.
I'm sorry.
But they do have a 24 hour security guard there.
You alerted them as well.
That guy came out and he's like, throw it out. So this is twice in about 2 days. He's like, throw it out. I'm like, come on, man. I'll just leave. He's like, no, throw it out, man. And so I pretend to throw it out and then I turn around and run. But like, no, for like 5 or 6 steps. And I was with some girls and they're like, no. So I turn around. I'm like, okay, man. And I throw the weed down. But I just, yeah, you just don't do these things. So I just forget. Because
you forget. Well, California spoils you a little bit too. Where
yeah. If no one would ever pull you over on the street and go, hey, man, what's this?
Yeah, right. I've been walking my dog and like walk past a woman with a stroller and I'm like, oh shit. And I'm
oh
like,
yeah.
Shit. And I like give the look like, sorry, it's weed. I won't do anything to you. I promise.
I always pass this house with the kid toys and stuff. I'm like, whatever, man. They're going to learn. They're going to learn sometime.
Your father probably drinks. It's fucking fine.
Yeah. If you have to explain. Yeah. When daddy gets drunk, he says really weird shit and does weird shit. But that guy who's smoking weed, be careful.
Yeah, watch out for him. He's a problem.
Yeah. He'll eat your food.
I was saying, who are your buddies when you started there?
Well,
like, or well, you, and you sometimes also, you guys pair up with like a writer, right? And you sort of return to collaborate with that, right?
Yeah. Like I think my third or second year, Eric Kenward was hired from the Harvard Lampoon, not National Lampoon. Yeah, and so we had a similar style or we found things similar. So I was writing with him a lot.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I wrote so much it didn't get put on the air, and it was the same kind of feeling. Like if I can make all the writers laugh, it's okay. It's kind of, it lessens the blow of not being
right. Of not being like a breakout sketch that sketch not popping.
Like, and I could not write sketches that I thought, like, this is what I'm really
right.
wanting to
do. You couldn't be writing Newt Gingrich, like, political takedowns.
Right, right.
Guys, what about this specific trade agreement? I couldn't imagine you. Like,
I wrote this sketch, and it was maybe my secret most proud moment I wrote a line where it was like, it just, it's like you have this weird scene with a hippie. Actually, I do this hippie character a lot on a... I call me Bang Bang. I call what the fuck?
It's not, I know I'm gonna know his name when you say it too. I can't. Right.
Shelley Driftwood. And then, well, I ended the scene with is that homeless man blowing that dog? That was the end, and then the scene ends, and we took that to dress. And that fucking line was on a cue card. And I'm like, how did this ever?
Oh,
You could probably watch those on Seeso. That'd be good, wouldn't it? If you could like see the cut, all my unfunny cut scenes from SNL.
I feel like they do release cut for time sketches now on Hulu.
Yeah,
and shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's some fucking some. You were part of some weird ass ones that ended
if,
up.
Yeah, all the, I would guarantee if you took my cut scenes from SNL and just put like a Munsters laugh track on it, it would be amazing. But watching it, the quiet,
it's a little brutal.
The deafening quiet is like, yeah, it's pretty rough.
There was a sketch of yours that I never seen until recently for some reason. And I thought I had seen like pretty much every SNL sketch. And it was the aquarium repair guys.
Oh, yeah, because that was cut. Yeah.
Oh, was it cut? Oh, yeah. It's out now. It's
now it's out, yeah.
On Hulu. So Google Hulu it or search this.
Aquarium Repairmen.
Search Aquarium Repairmen, and Horatio and Jimmy are so fucking funny in it. And you sort of hold it together until you guys get to Fred Armisen in the second beat of the sketch. And is that, I have to ask, are you guys losing your shit because you know he has his, because you know he has his pants around his ankles and he's going to do that insane
because
thing?
Because the insane, the bit of being insane at the end of a sketch is so fucking funny and
it's so,
and just overdone.
That sketch feels so modern though. It feels so new because it has like the sort of detachment in the second half and then like the classic ending. I'm like, this man isn't insane. You know, yeah. And it cuts to another room, another set, which is something SNL didn't do that often. So yeah, it felt like so many steps. So it feels very like a Mr. Show sketch or something because it ends like you know.
It's, yeah, for those who haven't seen it, it ends with Fred Armisen. He's a doctor. He's a psychiatrist. And he's trying to evaluate what's up
and,
with us.
And the funniest way, he's going, water. And you guys are going, what is he? Through hydrogen components with oxygen joined by a covalent bond? Through, and you guys, the premise of the sketch, because I just want, let's talk about this, is every time someone says something, you guys, and it sounds like something you and Jimmy were just doing around the office that got put into a sketch. You know what I mean? Because it just feels like such a great bit.
It's kind of like it was also in the heart, like in the meaty part of The Sopranos.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was really big at the time, too.
Yes. What is this guy? Fucking, huh? And you have like a witty thing like, hey, yeah. Anyone want to get a sandwich? What is this guy? The fucking Duke of Earl? The Earl of Sandwich over here?
Who's this guy? Fucking Mike? Who's this? Jared?
Who's this? Yo. Jared from fucking Subway? Hey, put the kids away. $5 footlongs here. Just like.
No, thank you.
And that's like that sense of humor that you guys are parodying there. Is like being like Italian from Long Island and like all my like blue collar
exactly.
white trash friends and stuff. That's that sense of humor. Like my dad's friends would always just be like, I'd be like, Dad, I want to go baseball. He's like, who, you got fucking Don Mattingly on you? Fucking little fat Dave Winslet. You know? Like, hey. You got fat little Don Mattingly on you? Let's go for, hey, put on your fucking jersey, where's your sideburns? You know, like you just extrapolate like.
I got a fucking Stephen Hawking's over here. I think he did. Wants me to go to a science fair.
Okay, let's go to science fair. Wait, you want to take your chair too? Oh, Galileo, huh? Maybe an apple fall on his head, huh? Like Newton.
Dad.
Yeah, it's like just the most dad type. And you guys are just doing. To Jeff Gordon is hosting that episode, which is.
Oh my
insane.
God, Jeff Gordon.
A race car driver is doing sketch comedy.
Those were the best shows, though, because, you know, they didn't know any better. So they're like, okay, it sounds right.
Oh, they'll do, like, the sketches that maybe would make you look bad if you were, like, trying to be, like, or they just chose stupid comedy. Well, like,
this is going to sound incendiary. But
that's
whenever,
a blanket statement whenever, if you come on my podcast.
Whenever women audition for SNL and... Or women ask me, or I offer my advice if they're auditioning. I always say, don't do little girl characters. You know, don't do little, like, because that's just been done a bunch of times.
Right, like Gilda and Amy.
Yeah,
Amy's
yeah.
Rick comes to mind. You when you play stepdad Rick.
And before Amy, I mean, there were, you know, that was you know, that'd been something you'd seen a while. It's about,
right.
Jesus, this is the worst. This is the worst. I can't come up with any names. Or remember why I even got on that tangent. Would you ask?
I said, you said, when I give advice, this is going to sound incendiary, I give advice to, what did I say before that? I don't remember either. People listening right now are like,
I think it was,
they're like, you were fucking talking about. we still don't know. We were talking about cut the aquarium. Oh, when hosts come that are like Jeff Gordon.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
So when Really Hot Girls hosted, they'd be like, I do this character. I'm a nerdy girl. And they put on fake braces and weird glasses.
Right,
and,
right.
And a similar thing with sports guys.
They would always play like like they would play femme or play, like little boys to be like, I'm not Peyton Manning. You know? Right, guys who like see them.
I'm a giant toddler.
Yeah, well, that's sort of like the attitude of like when you're in high school football and you like dress in drag and you're like, oh, isn't it funny? This is just isn't it funny because I'm a fuck or like I'm fucking so manly it's hysterical I have a wig on.
Yeah, right. Isn't it funny to even think of me being gay?
It is. Wait, that's weird, not old the only alpha male attitude. Like, that is not gonna read on this fucking podcast. I mean on this TV show. Or like and athletes. Then hot chicks do the whole like imagine if a guy actually didn't want to fuck me. Right? Like the game's always like some dumpy dude's like, leave me alone. It's like, I'm sorry, am I is Cindy Crawford with glasses and pigtails annoying? The whole premise of the sketch is like, imagine you could control yourself around me and not just fuck me. Like,
many of my sketches were like, can't you, isn't it hilarious that you would fuck me?
Yeah. You're just like, they're like, all right, Horatio, we have a hot female host. You're the fat guy on the show. Yeah. You are going to play her husband in a sketch.
I wrote, every time there was a hot one, I wrote a hot one. Every time there was a hot one out there.
Every time we had a fucking nice piece of drink.
<coming out. laughs> Well, when Britney hosted, and she was dating Justin Timberlake, and I wrote this thing where I was Justin Timberlake that was bit by 1,000 bees. So I come into her dressing room and try to hook up with her, but you know it's the old Horatio. In the end, it turns out it's Horatio. I had a lot of those characters that were bitten by bees. Just was swollen from bee bites.
Because Lauren insisted you had to look like the actor.
I'm like Lauren, realistic, man.
So were there any hosts that came in that you were like surprised you or blew you out of the water or? Were you so excited to actually work with? Because I feel like that's the best part about SNL is like, at some point you get to be in a sketch with Malkovich, like you get to act alongside, you know, Michael Douglas or some shit.
You know, people like Kelly Ripa. Yeah. I'm being honest. Like, they just you don't expect. You're like, okay, this person's a TV celebrity. You don't expect them to really be fun and like get it. And that happened with Kelly Ripa. And
she got like she was just
She was rolling with it, you know.
Oh,
she
that's
was great.
So fun.
And Julie Louis Dreyfus was no surprise, but
of course.
But I didn't expect her to be so versatile. I guess.
Yeah, she is the best.
Yeah, incredible. Still hot.
Unsaid. The worst audition I've ever had in my entire life was for Veep at not too long ago. Maybe last season or the season before, and Armando Iannucci and Julia Louis-Dreyfus are in there, and I'm going in to audition with her. I'm like reading against her, and she's the best. I mean, I loved Seinfeld growing up. I love Veep. She's so funny. She's so pretty. And I'm sitting here. She's like, hi, I'm Julia. I'm like, yeah, you seem familiar to me. Like, I make a joke. And it doesn't land at all.
Oh, brother.
And I turn to walk to the back of the room where I got to audition. And I'm already like, welp, I'm fucked. And I turn around and I'm like, has her hear her? I'm like, cannot. I try to make another joke later. You know, Armando and Iannucci's like, he's like, so these tech guys are like, they're really, they think their world, everything about them is they're important. Their jobs are the blah, blah. And he's like, oh, and I'm like, so like actors, huh? And I'm like, make a joke.
Again.
And just dead him and Julia Louis Dreyfus like, okay, well, let's get started. And I was like, huh? And I'm so upset. And I walk out and I'm fucking cursing to myself. I'm like shouting to myself. And DC Pearson comes up. He goes, oh, are you going into audition for that? I'm like, no, I just didn't. He's like, oh, it looked like you were running lines. And I was like, no, I was cursing myself out for embarrassing myself in front of A, at a job opportunity, and B, in front of Julia Louise Dreyfus. Was there anyone that when you, like that you were a fan of separately, like maybe a music act or a before, and they were, you're like, oh, I can't believe this. Because that would be me. Like, if I was
well,
on the
Radiohead,
show.
Radiohead's my favorite band. And when they played.
Oh, that's awesome.
I really had, you know, when the band plays and the show's going on, that you don't, people don't usually watch from right in front. If you do, you have to stand on a flat and it's against the back wall there. You right. know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so, yeah. I was there for the Michael Phelps episode on Bobby's first year, Bobby's first episode.
Yeah. Bobby, Bibby.
Bibby.
Our good friend Bibby. Yeah, so I'd be able to watch like my favorite bands like right there with no one between me and the band, you know, except those big cameras that would swoop, the cranes.
The jibs, yeah.
And so if you stayed against the wall, then you wouldn't get in their way and you were great. And I just stayed away from Tom York that whole week. Like they come in on Thursday and, you know, to warm up and or to, they do the sound check. And I just stayed away because I didn't want him to be like, what if he was a dick, you know?
Right, yeah, then that ruins the whole thing.
Ruins the whole catalog.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so funny when you hear a really big celebrity is cool, and you're just like, oh, thank God. You know, oh, like, yeah, I met Ray Liotta, and he was really funny and nice. You're like, oh, thank God, thank God. You know, you just don't want to hear they're an asshole, which I'm assuming often happens if you've been on that show for a number of years, and we don't have to name names here. I'm just saying, I'm sure someone comes in, you're like, this is really cool.
But that's actually one of the top three questions I get is, who's an asshole?
Right, because you know, that's what you learn, right, is when you're yeah. like, oh, this guy seems so cool on TV, and then when they come on the show, you're like, oh, shit, this is a nightmare.
Yeah, and yeah. It's usually the really good actors.
Because yeah. they don't want to do this silly bullshit, but someone has got to go see Cinderella Man.
Yeah, you know,
someone's got to get out there and busk for Cinderella Man. I'm like naming Russell Crowe for some reason. I love Russell.
Yeah, I don't want to say that all great actors on the show are bad because there's also, you know, but De Niro is almost, you know, iconically bad on the show. But he's great because it's fucking Robert De Niro, so who cares, you know?
Yeah, he can charm
even if he's holding a piece of paper in front of his face reading his lines, you're like, okay, it's Robert De Niro.
I'm happy to hear that, yeah.
Yeah, I wrote a sketch right where we're gangsters and I had him say Joe Pesci's line. You think I'm funny?
Yeah.
What the hell's so funny about me? And that was all, again, just like, that's the most iconic line in like any mob movie, and De Niro saying it because I fucking
<That's>
I thought
so
that would
awesome.
Be cool.
I'm like, how funny, like clown funny. I amuse you.
Yeah, and of
fucking
course,
love.
And he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it right. He just, it's on TV and you'll see it. He doesn't do it exact. Like, it's like, what? You talking to me? It's like if I'm trying to do you talking to me, I'm like, hey. You speaking over here? That's the impression, right?
I don't know. Hey, Mr. De Niro, I loved you as Taxi Driver. Hey, is it me that you're trying to talk to?
Who else are you trying to communicate with then? Yeah.
Did you get in trouble for... did you and Jimmy get in trouble for breaking? Not trouble, but was Warren like, come on, guys. Lock it up.
You know, I kind of heard it.
But he didn't say
it. He would never say it, yeah. I think he saw the value in it.
Right. There is, it's that reminder that it's live.
Yeah.
And that's like the fun thing about that show is everyone's... And I think that's when you see good live sketch like at UCB or any like live theater, it's like that one thing that it just can't happen in a video, you know? Like it's just that live...
Something has to crack that seal.
Right. And you're just watching, you're like, right, this is happening concurrently to me staring at this right now. Yeah.
I tried to knock down a flat at SNL. I didn't get in trouble for it, but when I was doing Choo Choo... I would become so sexually aroused, I would become insane, like a wild animal, and I was trapped in the changing thing. And I was like, how cool would it be if I tear down a flat? Like, no one's ever seen that on the show, where you just see a flat tear down, and behind it is just paint cans and guys, like, rewriting cue cards. I really fucking tried. But those guys put those sets together pretty great. Pretty sturdy. Like, I was throwing my whole 300 pounds at that goddamn thing. Because people would have been like, what the fuck? That's bananas.
That would have been so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that something like that happened this most recent season where they cut to like where I guess it was supposed to be Pete Davidson and John Radinsky, the two new guys, and John just wasn't there, and like it was clearly framed for a two shot, and Pete's like, and kind of says two lines back to back that respond to each other. Like there's a long pause, then he's like, "Well, I don't know how we're gonna get it." He's like, "Well, I'll tell you how." He just like says them both to himself.
I know what Lauren told him too.
You can drive a fucking truck through that pause you left.
That happened to me. I was it was like one of my first couple of years, and it was that goth talk sketch, and I had to just make another weird funny cameo at the end. I'm eating my own shoe over here. and the stage manager forgot, he didn't cue me, and I'm it was all like, you just cue me, I go.
Yeah,
we got it. He's like, you look at me, I'll tell you. Don't worry, buddy.
I love those guys. Those guys when you're shooting somebody's like, I got you. I'm not going to let you blah, blah, blah. You know, like they're like super intense. And then also you get nervous. You're like, oh, I wasn't worried for a second.
Right, exactly.
You're telling me too much.
Exactly. and this guy had been around at SNL for as long as I think it had been on. He famously attacked Chris Kattan after Kattan would fuck with him so bad. Attacked him finally. This is like a 70-year-old man. And he had he had buttons from like old TV shows, you know, on his vest. Sweet guy, Bobby Van Rye. And he forgot to cue me. And so, you know, they're out there like, silence. When is this? What's the next thing? So finally I run out and I do the sketch and it's obviously terrible. What, you know, the whole thing doesn't work because of me. Or my entrance, my character, whatever.
Right, right.
and I'm like, fucking Bob Van Rye, fuck me over. And I stayed really quiet. And it earned me a lot of points. It earned me a lot of respect that I got yelled at. Like, you know, Lauren, it was like one of the only times Lauren actually like yelled at me. And I just was like, okay.
And you didn't say the stage manager.
I didn't say. Yeah, I didn't say. And then afterwards... I was like the greatest guy in the world because I didn't snitch on him.
Yeah, yeah. Those fucking union guys, man. You don't.
And he was an incredible stage manager. Just, you know, every once in a while, miss a cue.
How are those parties? Those legendary after parties.
Oh, the crazy. Well, I'm sorry if you've heard these stories before, people, but the parties were very fun.
I haven't, so I
we had
to.
We had a very great time. But one time, Tracy was like, "Let me throw the party." I'm like, "Okay, Tracy, well, yeah, man, probably." He's like, "Hey, man, let me throw the after party."
Was it like someone on the staff, someone on the cast, threw the after party?
I threw it because when I was growing up, I'd read about Belushi and he had afters at the Blues Bar.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, let's bring that back. And Jimmy was definitely on board. They're like, yeah, let's bring that back. So we had a party every week, an after party. A friend of mine would go to the bar and drink, Becca Singer. She would go to the bar, drink, and be like, hey, do you want to host the SNL after? Of course. Yeah. So no one would say no to that.
Right.
She would just go on Fridays, we'd go to different bars, and then we'd have the after party there. And so finally, Tracy really wants to throw the party, so I let him throw it. And this is this loft space at Ground Zero. So we're all partying, going to a party. After party's great. We're all having a good time. That's like, well, let's go to the after. Where is it? It says here, like, West Side Highway. And
and you guys are outside of 30 Rock. And it's like...
We head all the way downtown to Ground Zero, the party. Tracy's like, you know, the MC, man of the hour. And it was like so crazy. Like, he had... He had ladies of the night there. They were dancing in rooms and offering to do shit with people. And it was like, Tracy,
you guys know each other's like significant others. Like, people's wives are coming to the after.
And of course, like, you know, Will steps in for like 3 seconds, turns around, leaves. just too fucking much for Will. Everyone you know and love from SNL from those years left. Just me and Jimmy and like just the crew. And he's got prostitutes there, and of course, I was the last to leave, and he put me in his book as the last to leave that party, and I'm very happy for that.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, I was making out with like a... I was making out with somebody on a couch as people were leaving. Just like putting my, you know, I was just gross making out with somebody. Like, what the fuck?
Tracy is the fucking best. Was he, I mean, he's probably, I know he's difficult to work with. I was on 30 Rock for 3 years as one of those like non-talking writers. So I know he's not the best at line memorization
right.
focus. But he is the best dude.
He's super funny though.
He's like the best.
What you don't realize is that hugeness is he makes it look like I'm just this dude all the time.
Right.
And he is to a certain extent, but he's also very funny and has that thing where he finds really small things really funny. Like,
yes.
He would be like, man, Rachel, isn't that fucking sad? The Hulk, when the Hulk dies, or when the Hulk, every week the Hulk has to go away and he's crying, you hear, doon, 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 doon. He's just kind of making fun of every episode was him like falling in love and having to leave because he turns green and hurts people. fucking week.
He was dude. So he's obsessed with fucking Planet of the Apes.
Yep.
I'm sure you know this. And Donnie Brasco is his. He thinks if you bring.
And he has like sharks and stuff.
And he has a huge aquarium.
Yeah.
on 30 Rock, Judah Friedlander would always go, watch me get Tracy Morgan going. And he would just turn and go, Tracy, Goodfellas is better than Donnie Brasco. And Tracy would then, this would be like, it's 9 a.m. at the first shot. Still at 5 p.m. when like the third set up, Tracy would be like, the thing about Donnie Brasco. Like he described Donnie Brasco to me like almost beat for beat. And then it goes, and then when he comes to the door, he's like, is your dad home? And he's got that hair on face. He's got that hair on face. And he's laughing so hard talking about how much he loves this part. I rewatched the movie after he talked to me about it because it's a split second face that his fucking son makes at one point that Pacino's son makes, and he's like laughing about it for a half hour in his dressing room. I'm like, you are an interesting cat. Like that's such a funny thing to pick up on.
He's a very specific. He's got those specific things. Like you know, he grew up with it. Like you recognize that thing. It's joking. It's making little small things that you don't really hear being joked about, making them huge and then getting the laughs. But you have to have that in the inception.
Yeah. And like he just delivered. He has such confidence, such charm when he's at like full speed. It's just the moment when he's like full volume screaming at you.
And he's like a cat too, like car accidents. Fucking also.
Yeah, the dude is indestructible.
It's like next level party. Tracy, you know this. People know him and know this, but at a certain point, he'd always take his shirt off and love
somebody
you.
Somebody gonna get pregnant up in
just
here.
Just love you. Someone's gonna get pregnant up in here.
And so then Tina, when she writes 30 Rock, is like, we have to just have Tracy
be Tracy.
Play be Tracy on this show.
Yeah, and so Tracy's now become Tracy more than ever. But me and Jimmy. We tried to go drinking with him, and he just got so insane that we couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
He took his shirt off and like laid on Sixth Avenue, and we're like, "This what the fuck? This guy."
That must be
just that kind of drunk where you're just mad and sad.
Yeah, that must have been great to show up on to start your first year on SNL and meet Jimmy Fallon. And be like, oh, this guy's pretty fun. We like the same shit. And then he's like, oh, hey, I like to party too. And you're like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And it's like, hey, I think everything you do is funny. You make me laugh. Like, that's such a fucking great dynamic you guys had.
Yeah, purely accidental.
Yeah.
From different schools. Like, I was Second City, and he was, like, just a stand-up in New York. And
a charming fucking.
A really fun thing, and even now, like when I go on the show or something, it's just like immediate. Like, there's something about this guy that is just fun. You know, there's something that we got that's pretty fun.
That's so awesome. That's so fun, man. That's great. Well, Horatio, thank you for coming on the show, man.
Oh, it was a blast.
I had a real blast. The best thing about having a podcast is someone will come over your house and hang out with you for an hour. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't sound like you, and just talk. Like, there's usually we'd have to like run into each other at a party, but now I get to have like a weekly 1 hour chat with some friends, and
it's great for
so self serving. I mean, podcasts are already so self serving.
Yes, exactly.
But like, when you invite me to come on the Horatio, which also you guys should listen to if you're not listening. If you listen to my podcast, but not Horatio's show, you got to listen to the Horatio for fucking pure pandemonium. At least the episodes I've been on and the couple I've listened to, the Jerry Minor episodes are. Wow. Or comedians in cars going to crime scenes or whatever that is. You got to check out the Horatio, people.
Thank you very much, brother.
Anything else you want to plug? Watch
Watch news. Match Game?
Are you on Match
Watch
Game?
The new Match Game?
Are you on?
I'm on three episodes. And Bibby, I think, is on several episodes.
Wait a minute.
I'm next to Rosie on Match Game.
You gotta be.
That's what's happening in the world today.
We've been playing Match Game 76 together for years in the stupidest characters, and now you get to be
at
on the
4
real
in the morning
match
at UCB. There's an insane sketch at the Del Close Marathon Match Game 76, which is just everybody that you know and love out of their fucking minds.
Being the most offensive, I played Lou Ferrigno and was deaf, but also racist.
I played Gacy and I choked out Flipper. The dolphin.
Because Chad Carter is always Flipper.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, you kind of have to play 70s characters in this. This is
right.
The only kind of rule.
1976. Yeah, yeah, it's the only rule. I've been J.R. Tolkien, as like a super stoner, that's a really so that's fun that you're now on the real Matt. That's like some full circle.
Yeah,
show.
It's pretty great, and it's Alec Baldwin hosting.
I fucking
which
love
is just another great level.
Yeah,
it's just really it's you should. I'm telling you, you'll probably like it. But,
I fucking you know I love Alec. Dude.
Yeah. So
fellow,
you know,
fellow
it's me
Islander.
Trying to bring what we do here to primetime television.
Awesome! I definitely will check that out. As always, I'm at. Oh wait, where are you on Twitter? Because people will probably.
Yes.
Want to shout bullshit at
Mr.
us.
Mr. Horatio Sands.
Mr. Horatio Sands. I'm at John Gabris, no H's. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Later, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.